We hope you'll join us again Monday for our next installment from the Recording Library of West Texas.
Now, here's your forecast for the Midland-Odessa area. It's 56 and clear. Tonight, clear with a low in the low 50s. Then, tomorrow, clear with a high in the low 60s. Tomorrow night, clear with a low in the low 40s. From the Recording Library of West Texas 24-Hour Weather Center, I'm Maria Lopez.
This is the Recording Library of West Texas. It's 1 p.m.
Good afternoon. Welcome to your coronavirus update from the Recording Library of West Texas for Friday, February 5th, 2021. I'm Michael, and here are some of the articles that we'll be reading today. White House expected to announce about 1,000 troops will be deployed to assist with vaccinations. FDA schedules meeting to consider Johnson & Johnson vaccine. AstraZeneca vaccine effective against UK variant, University of Oxford statement says. What is COVAX? The world's best hope for getting everyone vaccinated, explained. Different vaccines likely won't be divided by age groups right now, Dr. Sanjay Gupta says. It's too soon for people to have a choice about which COVID-19 vaccine they get, Dr. Fauci says. Virus variant first seen in UK might become dominant in US, Fauci says. It's still safest to avoid indoor dining, even if more U.S. states are allowing it. America's unemployment rate fell last month, but jobs recovery is still dragging during the pandemic. Pelosi predicts House will send COVID-19 relief package to Senate in approximately 2 weeks. First, we will check the numbers. In Ector County, confirmed cases, 7,411. Probable cases, 6,687. Fatalities, 298. Estimated active cases, 1,531. Estimated recovered, 12,269. These numbers are coming from the Texas Health and Human Services Commission. For Midland County, confirmed cases, 15,687. Fatalities, 215. Estimated active cases, 2,715. Estimated recovered, 12,757. These numbers for Midland County seem to be unchanged from yesterday. And from the Texas Tribune, COVID-19 cases and hospitalizations decreasing after record highs in January. Average new cases decreased by 300 cases compared with the 7-day average a week ago. On February 4th, 11,999 new confirmed cases and 2,749 new probable cases were reported. Hospitalizations decreased by 1,857 patients compared with a week ago. As of February 4th, 10,523 Texans are hospitalized for the coronavirus. Average new deaths decreased by 38 deaths compared with the 7-day average a week ago. On February 4th, 439 new deaths were reported. And now here are coronavirus briefs. The United States reported 119,931 new COVID-19 infections and 4,941 additional virus-related fatalities on Thursday, according to a tally by Johns Hopkins University. Thursday's figures include more than 1,500 backlog deaths reported by the Indiana State Department of Health. That raises the national tally to at least 26,676,957 coronavirus cases and 455,738 deaths. Vaccines. At least 57,489,675 vaccine doses have been distributed and at least 35,203,710 shots administered, according to the U.S. Centers for Disease Control and Prevention. Influential model forecasts more than 630,000 U.S. COVID-19 deaths by June 1st. COVID-19 vaccine doses administered in the U.S. this week outnumbered new cases 10-1. White House hopes to revive Trump plan to mail masks to Americans, Chief of Staff says. CDC director says guidance on reopening U.S. schools will be released in the coming week. And now, here are the articles that we have for today. White House expected to announce about 1,000 troops will be deployed to assist with vaccinations, from CNN's Barbara Starr. The Biden administration is expected to announce Friday it is sending about 1,000 U.S. troops to help around the country with COVID-19 vaccinations. The announcement is expected from the White House as early as this morning, according to two defense officials. The plan calls for the troops to form into five teams to travel to designated sites. Orders are expected to call for troops to be ready to deploy within 96 hours of receiving their orders. This effort is the first part of the FEMA request to the DOD to provide military assistance for vaccinations to meet President Biden's goal of increasing the number of Americans who get doses during his first 100 days in office. The Defense Department and FEMA have been discussing sending up to 10,000 troops. Each team will have personnel who can administer vaccines as well as support troops. The goal is for the military to eventually ramp up to administering approximately 450,000 vaccines a day. The U.S. Northern Command in Colorado Springs is now expected to work out exactly what troops will go and a potential mix of active duty and National Guard. There is already a significant but separate military effort. There are over 20,000 National Guardsmen deployed, providing COVID support, including at over 216 vaccine sites in 36 states and territories, said Max Rose, COVID senior advisor to the Department of Defense. The Pentagon has also kept hundreds of personnel on notice to be prepared to deploy, mainly for helping overwhelmed healthcare facilities and hospitals around the country. FDA schedules meeting to consider Johnson & Johnson vaccine, from CNN's Maggie Fox. The U.S. Food and Drug Administration has scheduled a meeting of vaccine advisors to discuss Johnson & Johnson's request for emergency use authorization, EUA, for its coronavirus vaccine. The FDA Vaccines and Related Biological Products Advisory Committee, VRBPAC, will meet on February 26th. Johnson & Johnson said earlier Thursday it had applied for the EUA on behalf of its Janssen Biotech vaccine-making subsidiary. The timing means the FDA would not decide on authorization before the end of the month. In terms of timing for convening the VRBPAC meeting following the submission of the EUA request, this amount of time will allow the FDA to thoroughly evaluate the data and information submitted in the EUA request before the meeting and to be prepared for a robust public discussion with the advisory committee members, the FDA said in a statement. The FDA added that it cannot predict how long it would take to make a decision, but that the agency would review the request as expeditiously as possible while still doing so in a thorough and science-based manner. The meeting will be live-streamed on the agency's YouTube, Facebook, and Twitter channels and from the FDA website. AstraZeneca vaccine effective against UK variant, University of Oxford statement says, from CNN's Martin Gorliando. The Oxford AstraZeneca COVID-19 vaccine has similar efficacy against the B117 Kent coronavirus strain currently circulating in the UK to previously circulating variants, a statement from the University of Oxford published Friday said. The university said a preprint of ongoing work to assess the effectiveness of its coronavirus vaccine also described recent analysis showing that the vaccination results in a reduction in the duration of shedding and viral load, which may translate to a reduced transmission of the disease. Andrew Pollard, professor of the pediatric infection and immunity and chief investigator on the Oxford vaccine trial, said data from our trials of the CHADOX1 vaccine in the United Kingdom indicate that the vaccine not only protects against the original pandemic virus, but also protects against the novel variant B117, which caused the surge in disease from the end of 2020 across the UK. Sarah Gilbert, professor of vaccinology and chief investigator on the Oxford vaccine trial, said the university was working with AstraZeneca to optimize the pipeline required for a strain change should one become necessary. This is the same issue that is faced by all of the vaccine developers, and we will continue to monitor the emergence of new variants that arise in readiness for a future strain change, she added. What is COVAX? The world's best hope for getting everyone vaccinated, explained by CNN's Tim Lister. It's called COVAX, and it may be the best hope in vaccinating the world. The relative obscurity of this vaccine program belies its critical role in the global battle against COVID-19. Indeed, COVAX may well be the most important acronym of 2021. As vaccine nationalism rears its ugly head, it's the best, perhaps the only, bet on getting billions of doses to lower and middle income countries. COVAX is an entity run by a coalition that includes the Vaccine Alliance, known as Gavi, and the World Health Organization, and is funded by donations from governments, multilateral institutions, and foundations. Its mission is to buy coronavirus vaccines in bulk and send them to poor nations that can't compete with wealthy countries in securing contracts with the major drug companies. But raising the necessary funds will be a tall order, and the logistics are daunting. It has secured almost 2.3 billion doses for distribution this year. Of that total, 1.8 billion should be made available to 92 of the world's poorest countries, the majority of which, 1.3 billion, will be at no cost. Gavi has plenty of experience in getting vaccines to populations in need. It has helped vaccinate half the world's children against other diseases, such as polio, meningitis, and typhoid. But the COVID-19 campaign dwarfs those programs. Different vaccines likely won't be divided by age groups right now, Dr. Sanjay Gupta says, from CNN's Adrian Vogt. CNN's Dr. Sanjay Gupta says he doesn't predict certain vaccines being administered to different demographic groups right now. Responding to a viewer question about the possibility of administering the Johnson & Johnson vaccine to those between the ages of 20 and 49, when they are eligible, Gupta said this on CNN's New Day. That could be the case later on. We'll see. But not right now. I mean, these vaccines, especially given that the demand is so much greater than the supply, the idea of starting to parse it out that way, we'll see what the CDC says, but I doubt that will be the way they go with this. About the vaccine. Johnson & Johnson officially asked the U.S. Food and Drug Administration for an emergency use authorization of its COVID-19 vaccine. The vaccine is delivered in a single shot, whereas Pfizer and Moderna's require two doses. It was shown to be 66% effective in preventing moderate and severe disease in a global Phase 3 trial, according to the company. And its efficacy against moderate and severe disease was 72% in the U.S. The Johnson & Johnson vaccine, when it was trialed, that happened at a different time. It was later in this pandemic, and it happened in a different place. South Africa, Brazil, places where we know these variants have been spreading, Gupta explained. So when we say 95% with the Pfizer vaccine compared to 85% effective for the Johnson & Johnson vaccine, I don't know that you can say that is a direct head-to-head comparison, because you are essentially testing it against a sort of different disease, Gupta said. They're all really good vaccines. I think you've got to inoculate people who are at the greatest risk of dying, of getting sick, of being hospitalized, which will lead to death rates going down, he added. It's too soon for people to have a choice about which COVID-19 vaccine they get, Fauci says, from CNN's Andrea Diaz. It's too soon for people to think they may be able to pick and choose among coronavirus vaccines, said Dr. Anthony Fauci, head of the National Institute of Allergy and Infectious Diseases. Even with Johnson & Johnson asking the Food and Drug Administration for emergency use authorization of its vaccine, there's just not enough vaccine available, Fauci told CNN on Thursday. I don't think right in the beginning they will, because right now, the demand is far excess of the supply. So people will, I think, gladly take whatever is available to them, Fauci said. If the Johnson & Johnson vaccine wins an EUA, that would make three vaccine brands on the U.S. market: Pfizer, BioNTech, Moderna, and Johnson & Johnson. As we get through February into March and April and May, when the amount of vaccines becomes much more plentiful, there is certainly a possibility that people will know that this particular vaccine is maybe given in the pharmacies, and this you might get in a clinic or at your doctor's office or wherever. They could potentially have a choice, Fauci said. The Pfizer and Moderna vaccines are very similar and require two doses. Johnson & Johnson's vaccine uses a different approach and needs only one shot to work. Virus variant first seen in UK might become dominant in US, Fauci says, from CNN's Andrea Diaz. The coronavirus variant B117, first identified in the UK, is already spreading in the United States and might become dominant in the country, said Dr. Anthony Fauci. A recent study from the UK showed that the variant might be somewhat more deadly in the sense of making people sicker and certainly leading to death more, Fauci told CNN on Thursday. It might become dominant because it seems to be very efficient in spreading from person to person. The only way to prevent the variants from becoming dominant is to stop them from spreading by following public health measures and getting as many people vaccinated as quickly as possible, Fauci said. We have a possibility and the capability of trying to stop them from becoming dominant, he added. About the variant. The B117 strain had been circulating in Kent, England, since at least September. It spreads 30 to 70% more easily than the original strand of the virus, according to Britain's chief scientific advisor, Patrick Balance. UK scientists have also found a mutation in some samples of the variant that could allow COVID-19 to escape antibody protection. The variant has now been spotted in at least 70 countries and most U.S. states. It's still safest to avoid indoor dining, even if more U.S. states are allowing it, from CNN's Jen Christensen. With the Super Bowl this weekend and Valentine's Day coming up, you may be planning a special meal. But health experts say with the pandemic still raging in the U.S., and with variants popping up, the safest choice is takeout. Despite the high number of cases, more American states and cities are letting restaurants open their doors to diners, albeit with limitations. Last Friday, Los Angeles said its restaurants could reopen with restrictions and 50% capacity. Chicago reopened with rules that encourage physical distancing and masks. New York announced restaurants could reopen at 25% capacity, just in time for Valentine's Day. Dr. Anthony Fauci said Tuesday that eating inside during a pandemic can be done, but only if it's done carefully. If you do indoor dining, you do it in a spaced way where you don't have people sitting right next to each other. The director of the National Institute of Allergy and Infectious Diseases told CNN's Don Lemon. Good airflow is key, he said. What you want to avoid is breathing in other people's exhaled breath, which could be laden with virus. America's unemployment rate fell last month, but jobs recovery is still dragging during the pandemic, from CNN's Anakin Tapp. America's unemployment rate fell to 6.3% in January, beating economists' expectations, but still signaling a sluggish recovery. The U.S. economy added 49,000 jobs last month, according to the government jobs report released Friday morning. Pelosi predicts House will send COVID-19 relief package to Senate in approximately 2 weeks, from CNN's Betsy Klein. House Speaker Nancy Pelosi called House Democrats' meeting with President Biden and Vice President Kamala Harris a joy on Friday. Biden was values-based, knowledge-informed, and strategic in his presentation, and while he and the group were open to bipartisanship, she expressed encouragement that the White House was working on getting results as soon as we can in the best possible way. Pelosi said that Democratic leader Steny Hoyer will take the budget resolution to the floor Friday afternoon, and Budget Committee Chair John Yarmuth will lead debate on the budget plan. She said that on Monday, they will begin working on the specifics of the bill and predicted that the House will send a bill to the Senate, hopefully in a two-week period of time, so that this will be done long before the due date of the expiration of unemployment insurance in March. After the package is passed, she said they will work on a recovery act to create additional jobs. We have a couple of more articles that are longer. I'm going to read portions of these articles in the interest of time. This from the Texas Tribune. COVID-19 testing has become a cash cow for freestanding ERs in Texas, experts say, and it's getting out of control. By Ashley Lopez. Edgar Barrena and his fiancée Marissa Javed wanted to see family in Houston over the holidays, so they decided to get COVID-19 tests before their trip. Javed noticed a drive-through testing site at Austin Emergency Center on South Lamar. It was advertising results within 48 hours, which they thought was perfect. They had maybe a banner that said PCR testing with a quick turnaround, Bahurguana said, and we were looking for that. Austin Emergency Center runs four freestanding ERs in Austin. These are emergency rooms not attached to hospitals. Bacarena and Javed drove out to the ER on a Monday morning right before it opened. They waited an hour and a half to get tested, then the process took another 30 minutes. The test itself went fairly smoothly, he said. We spoke to a nurse that had asked some very basic questions beforehand, and then we had a doctor come through a few minutes after that to do the actual test itself. Barguerena said they gave staff their health insurance cards and were told they probably wouldn't have to pay anything out of pocket. Their insurance would take care of it. All they had to do at this point was drive away and wait for results. About 2 days later, they learned they were in the clear. Both tested negative. Weeks after that, Barguerena was looking at his insurer's website. He was curious about the cost of the test and expecting it to be about $200 or $300. The reality was quite stark, he said. It ended up being closer to almost $2,000 that was ultimately charged. In a statement, an Austin Emergency Center spokesperson said it doesn't directly charge insured patients for COVID-19 tests. Importantly for the patient, most major insurance companies will fully cover emergency room visits for COVID-19-related issues, the spokesperson said. Moreover, if an insurance company were to bill a patient for an out-of-network visit to our emergency room, such as if the bill were to go to patient responsibility, our billing company will go to bat for the patient and will appeal on their behalf. Even though he's not responsible for the bill, Bahugrana said $2,000 for one test seems high for a test that's $167 on average. That was surprising, honestly, he said. It just seemed like an exaggerated cost. The proliferation of freestanding ERs in Texas. COVID-19 testing has become big business for freestanding emergency rooms in Texas. These facilities have been charging insurance plans thousands of dollars for a single COVID-19 test. Advocates say it's driving up the cost of health care, and they want state lawmakers to step in. Freestanding ERs have been in Texas since about 2009, said Jamie Dudzing, CEO of the Texas Association of Health Plans. She said they don't exist in most other states. Kevin Harrington, the president of the Texas Association of Freestanding Emergency Centers, said they were designed to be in the community where the need is, particularly in places that don't have nearby hospital emergency rooms. But they have proliferated. There are 200 freestanding ERs licensed with the state. Many are in big cities, too, which already have hospital emergency rooms. Dudzing said people often mistake them for urgent care centers, also known as a doc in the box. They look and feel like an urgent care facility, she said, because they are located in the same type of strip malls. Facility fees. But they are different from urgent care centers in some very big ways. Namely, they can bill patients as if they were a hospital emergency room, Dudzing said, which means they get to charge something called a facility fee. Facility fees are what hospital ERs charge for all their overhead costs, basically all the doctors, technicians, machines, and nurses in that hospital. And these could be really expensive fees that aren't really involved with the care you were given, Dudzing said. and they have the ability to charge that same facility fee even though they don't have any of the same overhead cost. Freestanding ERs initially were meant to provide emergency care, but over time, she said a lot of them have started handling the stuff that urgent care facilities do, which is relatively minor stuff like allergic reactions, colds, stomach issues, and preventative screenings. But freestanding ERs charge a very big fee for that care. Dudsoning said this non-emergency care has become a growing chunk of their business. And then the pandemic came. The pandemic testing boom. Early on, freestanding ERs saw this big open lane for COVID-19 testing. Harrington said patients were desperately seeking tests, but they were hard to come by. From a consumer standpoint, there was very little access points for COVID-19 testing, he said. He said local health officials were struggling to get sites up and running, but freestanding ERs already had enough of the machines and resources to set up testing sites fairly quickly. And Harrington said that they had the bandwidth to take this on. The freestanding ER industry is capable of handling the volume and capable of handling the patient, he said. What was a design flaw is in the rules and regulations from the state about how we have to handle a patient when they present to our property. That design flaw was the rules in place, or lack of rules, about how to bill people who aren't coming inside for care but are coming in to see medical staff for drive-through testing. Harrington said many freestanding ERs kept their usual system in place for these patients. These billing components that are going to happen automatically, he said. That means adding a facility fee, even if someone never left the car. In retrospect, Harrington said this is not the appropriate way to handle the situation. In late September, the Texas Association of Freestanding Emergency Centers sent a letter to members saying it strongly opposes the practice of billing excessive fees for COVID-19 testing. Improper billing practices include charging facility fees or emergency-level professional fees that are inconsistent with the level of care provided to a patient, the group wrote. In particular, facility fees and professional fees for COVID-19 patients should only be used for patients who receive testing and associated services inside of a licensed freestanding emergency center who are seen and evaluated by a physician. But this, of course, is not binding policy, and the practice has continued. Health insurance companies shoulder the cost. Part of the reason this has continued is because patients haven't had to pay for these exorbitant fees out of pocket. Blake Hudson, the associate state director for AARP Texas, said these big bills have fallen largely to insurance companies. There's a federal law that says the insurance companies are supposed to cover the cost of the test without any cost to the patient, he said. And I think what is happening here is that these facilities are testing the limits of that and seeing how much they can get reimbursed for something as simple as a COVID-19 test. And it turns out there aren't many limits. Hudson said charges to people's health insurance have just gotten bigger. What was initially a $1,000 or $2,000 bill are now up to $5,000, $6,000, he said. I have even heard of stories of up to $12,000 bills. Hudson said this whole thing really looks and feels like price gouging, but by law, it might not be. According to state law, Dutzening said, freestanding ERs are allowed to bill up to 200% of the average charge for a service, which she said can be a really high ceiling. If I heard someone got a $10,000 fee for a COVID test that should have just cost $150, I don't care if it meets that threshold or not. That's price gouging, she said. That just should not have happened. Breathing life back into bad actors. Dudsoning said these facilities had a history of price gouging and giving misleading information about services or insurance coverage issues when they first came to Texas. For a while, state lawmakers had started reining them in. There was a time when bad actors started disappearing, Hudson said. This COVID-19 testing price gouging that we see is really breathing life back into those bad actors, he said. And so the legislature is going to have to step back and look at what they did to try to fix the problems and what needs to change now to really rein those bad actors back in. Hudson said there should also be enforcement of existing laws and protections. The Texas Association of Health Plans sent a letter to state officials January 29th asking them to enforce state regulations for freestanding emergency rooms regarding billing, advertising, and disclosures. In the letter, it asked Texas to take a more active role to rein in egregious billing by freestanding ERs. Unless things change, Hudson said, there's really no reason for freestanding ERs to stop. I don't know where the end is on this, he said. And you know, if you can get insurance companies to pay thousands of dollars for a test, then you know that is an absolute cash cow for your business. Why you should care. Even though these costs aren't coming directly out of consumers' pockets, Hudson said they eventually will. The problem with outrageous costs like this is that when insurance companies pay them, all that cost gets wrapped up back into our premiums, he said. All of us, every single one of us, eats those costs in our insurance premiums when our insurance companies are forced to pay huge amounts for very simple procedures like a COVID-19 test. Dudsoning said this also contributes to the rising cost of healthcare overall, which is particularly egregious during a national health crisis. We shouldn't be wasting valuable dollars that we all need in healthcare on $5,000 COVID tests, she said. At the very least, reining in these charges will also stop spooking patients. In a Kaiser Family Foundation poll a few years ago, 67% of people surveyed said they worry about unexpected medical bills. It's actually the thing people are most afraid of, not being able to afford in their lives. Anissa Mathias, who got a COVID-19 test at an Austin emergency center a month and a half ago, said she panicked when she saw her insurance was getting charged over $1,000. I was like, whoa, that really is high, even just for a COVID test, she said. And I know that is still pending. They are still processing the insurance. But just the fact the test is out of that much I will have to be paying seems really crazy. Mathias said she was worried she might have to pay some of it because it was so expensive. Despite knowing now she probably won't, she said she still thinks this is the kind of thing that makes people upset about the U.S. healthcare system. This is just a perfect example of like, wow, this was so unnecessary and could just appear to be a money grab, depending how it turned out. And that is our coronavirus update for this Friday, February 5th, 2021, from the Recording Library of West Texas. I'm Michael, and coming up next, we will bring you Entertainment Weekly to take us up to 2 o'clock. Following that, of course, it's USA Today with the national news. And at 3 o'clock, it's our local news broadcast, and here are some of the articles that our volunteers have been reading today. From the Midland Reporter-Telegram, transportation, Craddock appointed to energy resources and two other committees. Change is coming. Let the modernization of I-20 begin. Decade-long project will bring I-20 into the 21st century. Gas prices. Midland bucks the trend with no weekly price increase. Oil. Texas lost nearly 60,000 oil and gas jobs in 2020. And now from Friday's Odessa American. Mass effort continues next week. More than 13,000 have been vaccinated at Ratliff. And Chef Alejandro eager to start new venture. Those are a few of the articles that we will be reading coming up in our 3 o'clock broadcast. And then at 6 o'clock, we'll have more national news from the Wall Street Journal. Following that at 7 o'clock, I like to remind you on Fridays, it's our program that is from the Kansas Reading Center that's called On the Lighter Side, which after all the news that we're bringing you every day, much of which is pretty heavy stuff, this is a way to kind of lighten the load for the end of the week and end the week with a laugh or two. That's all coming up in the coming hours on Recording Library of West Texas Radio. We'll be back Monday at 1 o'clock with more coronavirus updates. In the meanwhile, have a great weekend. Stay safe.
Now, here's your forecast for the Midland-Odessa area. It's 59 and clear. Tonight, clear with a low in the low 50s. Then, tomorrow, clear with a high in the low 60s. Tomorrow night, clear with a low in the low 40s. From the Recording Library of West Texas 24-Hour Weather Center, I'm Maria Lopez.
This is the Recording Library of West Texas.
This program is made available to the IAAIS Program Share and was recorded at the Audio Reading Service of the Ellen County Public Library in Fort Wayne, Indiana, for people with print impairments.
Welcome. This is Entertainment Weekly, the February 2021 issue, and I'm your reader, Elizabeth Smith, with the Audio Reading Service at the Ellen County Public Library in Fort Wayne, Indiana. And today we'll be focusing on First Take, a section of Entertainment Weekly that's edited by David Canfield. This is an exclusive preview of your next obsessions. It starts with Army of the Dead. Director Zack Snyder has crossed a heist action movie with a zombie horror film for Netflix summer blockbuster, All Bets Are Off, by James Hibbard. A hell of a three-word pitch, zombie heist movie. You can immediately envision a story about a capable hero who assembles a team of undesirables to infiltrate an impregnable fortress, in this case, a Las Vegas casino, during an undead uprising. Call it Ocean's 11 Days Later, or The Fast and the Cadaverous, or even its actual title, Army of the Dead. But according to writer-director Zack Snyder, there's one major element of his Netflix movie you won't see coming. It is a full-blown, balls-to-the-wall zombie heist movie, so it's genre on genre in a great way, says Snyder, Man of Steel, and 300. So you expect pure zombie mayhem, and you get that, 100%. But you also get these really amazing characters on a fantastic journey. It's going to surprise people that there's a lot of warmth and real emotion with these great characters. Yep, a zombie heist movie, but with heart. Snyder got the idea for his monster genre mashup shortly after finishing his acclaimed 2004 remake of George A. Romero's zombie classic, Dawn of the Dead. The setup is that a plague has been released from Area 51, an origin story that's getting its own 4-hour Netflix animated prequel series. And the U.S. government has managed to contain the outbreak by building a wall around Sin City. But there's still all that cash in zombie-infested casinos, if only somebody is brave or dumb enough to get it. The idea languished in development for years at Warner Brothers. They didn't want to spend that kind of money on a zombie movie, or just didn't take it that seriously, Snyder says. Then Netflix, as the streamer tends to do, stepped up to stake the project. For his lead hero, Snyder reached out to Dave Bautista of Guardians of the Galaxy, who quickly said the opposite of yes. I said I wasn't interested, Bautista recalls. I had this chip on my shoulder and was looking for juicy, dramatic roles. Then I read the script, and it was a lot deeper and had a lot more layers than I thought. Bautista became such a convert. He says he gave up a part in Guardians director James Gunn's upcoming The Suicide Squad to keep the role. The project hit a far more serious snag after filming wrapped up when a member of the ensemble cast, Chris D'Elia, was accused of sexual misconduct by several women in June. Snyder asked another actor from the stand-up world, Tig Notaro of Star Trek Discovery, to play D'Elia's sarcastic helicopter pilot character. It was the best thing to do, not just for the property, but for respecting humanity and people and decency, Snyder says. But the production shakeup meant putting Otero in the surreal position of performing against a green screen while attempting to fit into a film, that had already been shot. It's a comedic role, and Zach said he wanted me to do exactly what I do, which is good because I always tell directors, before you say anything, just keep in mind that I have no range, the deadpan comedian says. But I did start to think, wow, I'm starring in a movie, because it seemed like I was the focal point of everything. There's also a dash of political overtones, metaphors about border walls, consumerism, and a president. But don't worry, not too much. We're running around killing zombies on crap tables, Bautista says. It's just a ton of fun. Next on First Take is Dennis Quaid as Reagan. One word best encapsulates Dennis Quaid's initial reaction to being offered the role of Ronald Reagan. Confusion. I didn't understand why they were offering me Ronald Reagan because I just didn't see it, the actor 66 admits. I admired him so much, and so I had a chill of fear go down my spine when I was offered it. That's usually kind of a sign that maybe I should do it because it's out of my comfort zone. Directed by Sean McNamara of The Miracle Season, the long gestating biopic Reagan was adopted from conservative author Paul Kenger's book, The Crusader, Ronald Reagan and the Fall of Communism, by screenwriter Howard Klausner. Producer Mark Joseph also spoke to more than 50 people who personally knew the former president to get stories, many of which he says have never been shared publicly before. To use as additional inspiration for the sprawling film, which follows Reagan as a child, a young man coming up in Hollywood, played by Wizards of Waverly Place alum David Henry, and eventually as president into the later years of his life. Reagan's role as Screen Actors Guild president and the fight he led against communism in the industry will also feature in the movie. Those behind Reagan don't view the project as partisan. The way the film is set up, it's not Democrats are good, Republicans are bad, or vice versa, Joseph says. It's more about there was totalitarianism in the world, and Americans together helped to end that. My hope is that it's a movie that doesn't divide, but unifies. Instead, the guiding principle of Reagan came from Rocky director John G. Avildsen, who was originally slated to direct the film before his death in 2017. He told me, when I did Rocky, it's not really about boxing. It just happened that boxing was the backdrop for the story about the guy. And so that really guided me for Reagan, Joseph says. It's really about a man and the challenges he faces, the people that helped him become who he becomes, the good and the bad. A story about a perfect person isn't very interesting, but a story about a man who's flawed, just like all of us, is always interesting. Quaid, who says the actor-turned-politician is his favorite president, echoes that sentiment, calling this the most interesting role he's ever done, despite his initial fear. I tried to share some of that human frailty because none of us are perfect, he says. It was an honor to play him. Article by Lauren Huff. Due date out fall of 2021. Moment of truth. Two of the most talented stars of their generation, Daniel Kaluuya and Lakeith Stanfield, reached new stunning heights in the epic and Oscar-bound Judas and the Black Messiah by Andrew Lawrence. When it comes to emotional scene work, Lakeith Stanfield's method is to retreat into silence. Something about it sends his mind racing to call up every dark moment, difficult loss, and deep-seated sadness. But on December 4th, 2019, things got a little too quiet for the Atlanta star on the Cleveland set of Judas and the Black Messiah, the bravura first studio film from director Chaka King that rehashes the state-sanctioned killing of 21-year-old Black Panther Party chairman Fred Hampton. On the docket was a scene that called for Stanfield, who plays a college-age FBI informant named William O'Neill, to betray an unwitting Hampton during a Last Supper-type party at the chairman's home, hours before Chicago police would storm in on O'Neill's intel and pockmark the place and Hampton in a hail of bullets. The hush that came over the set that day was palpable. The apartment looked too real to Stanfield. The cigarette smoke, the food on the stove, they hit differently. Every time his eye caught a jug of Kool-Aid, a key prop in the scene, Stanfield would swallow a little harder. And then there was the man playing Hampton, Stanfield's dear friend and former Get Out scene partner, Daniel Kaluuya. Daniel felt like Fred, recalls Stanfield 29, who struggled to keep himself together. Between takes, he'd go from weeping to throwing up. I was trying to purge all these weird emotions. Kaluuya could feel it too. It was not easy on the heart, if I'm being very honest, says the 32-year-old Oscar nominee. There were days that you just felt low with the weight of the reality. To be channeling those ideas, that time and that dynamic, it lay heavy on the cast. The night before the raid scene, I couldn't sleep, adds Dominique Fishback, who plays Hampton's partner, Deb Johnson. My heart was pounding so hard. I had to keep telling myself, Daniel's gonna be okay. How they were even able to push through with Hampton's real-life only child and widow looking on and finish filming that moment right around the 50th anniversary of Hampton's assassination at that is a testament to the collective commitment of the Judas cast and crew. It's also a reflection of the responsibility they felt to not just tell the chairman's story, but to tell it like it was. I found out how much Fred meant to me and how much I believe in his ideas, his concepts. Concepts that are still here within America, Kaluuya says. Marvel's Black Panther has been churning in the culture for long enough. You could almost forget there was a time in the not-too-distant past when the phrase was anything but comic. In 1969, J. Edgar Hoover famously labeled the real-life Black Panther Party and its estimated 5,000 national members the greatest threat to the internal security of the country. A moment reprised in Judas with Martin Sheen playing the infamous FBI director. That's right, President Bartlett's gone rogue. It hardly mattered that the Black Panther Party was largely made up of poor and working class young people of various races who were pooling their time and resources to give away breakfast to children, build free clinics, and police their own neighborhoods. Hampton, the charismatic Chicagoan in charge of the party's largest chapter, was simply too charismatic, too organized, too much like Martin Luther King Jr. and Malcolm X. He had to go. In our COVID-stricken, racially charged scenario, Judas feels like a story from 5 minutes ago, not 50 years. It's easy to get depressed about how seemingly little progress has been made until you consider how many of Hampton's ideas, not least giving needy kids free hot meals, have become institutionalized. It just goes to show, as the man himself once said, that you can kill the revolutionary, but not the revolution. This film, distributed by Warner Brothers, and as part of the studio's 2021 release plan, following simultaneously in theaters and on HBO Max February 12th, sets the record straight. The accepted pro-cop slant propagated in the American media had stopped the Hampton family from blessing any project, to the point where they figured the only movie they could ever get it right was one they made themselves. So they tried, about 8 years ago. I have the footage of Moss Def set to play the chairman, and the Lady of Rage was Deb, says Chairman Fred Hampton Jr., 51. Meanwhile, Shaka King was quietly making his mark in comedy. A Hampton project didn't occur to the filmmaker until the stand-up twins Kenny and Keith Lucas, 2017's Netflix special on drugs, sold him on the idea in 2016. Then, King brought in brawny producers and super agent-turned-rainmaker Charles D. King, who says his company, Macro, helped front part of the funding for Judith, and Black Panther director Ryan Coogler, an old friend. They'd met at the Sundance Film Festival in 2013. For the longest time, Coogler could never quite figure out how to tell a story that always hit too close to home. The pressure to get it right was something that not that I was afraid of it, but it just didn't feel like a natural thing for me to think about as a writer-director, says Coogler, an Oak Cliff native with family ties to the Panther Party. It helped that Hampton Jr. remembered Coogler from his days passing out party flyers at a Bay Area flea market as a boy, and that racial profiling was more than just thematic tinseling for the Black-led Judas cast. I'm from East New York, says Fishback 29. I've had family members who were murdered by cops. Cops raided my 20th birthday party just because we were in East New York and just because we were having fun. Johnson, who changed her name to Akur Najiri, recalls one late night after a pre-production meeting at Hampton's childhood home, now a nonprofit headquarters, when her son instructed one of the members of the Hampton team to look up the worst community in Chicago, then asked the room, "Who all gonna go?" After a beat of pin-drop silence, Fishback and Kahlua didn't hesitate. "Oh, we going," they said. Najiri, now 70, was overcome. "I think 11 people had just gotten killed in that area," Najiri recalls, "and they went at, like, 1:30 in the morning. I really took note of that, how everyone was willing to listen and learn our point of view." As film archetypes go, you'd be hard-pressed to find one more cliché than the snitch. What King and co-writer Will Burson captured with William O'Neill, more deeply than perhaps any filmmakers before them, is the frailty at the root of the treachery and how, really, any one of us could be boxed into a similar position. Making this movie has me at times think, "Where has this ancestor manifested in my behavior?" says King. I hope that's an effect the movie has on the viewer, because that's the only real reason to humanize William O'Neill. When Stanfield first received the Judas script from King, he cried for hours at both the tragedy and the beauty of the story being told, he says. "I was like, I can't wait to play Fred. Obviously, that's who you're thinking about for me, right? Because I know you ain't thinking about me for that other dude." When King confirmed his fear, Stanfield went straight to Google. "I was like, damn, I kind of look like this dude." In Judas, O'Neill's antihero journey drives a three-way cat-and-mouse game between O'Neill and Hampton, O'Neill and himself, and O'Neill and FBI agent Roy Mitchell, whom Jesse Plemons portrays with trademark understatement. Fishback is equally subtle as Deb, arming her with an unflinching inner strength and a journal full of poems written in the character's voice that she was able to work into the film. Kahlua's performance as Fred, on the other hand, was much bigger, bigger than he could even grasp at times. "Usually, when I do a job, I can remember what they take and they use," Kahlua says, "but when I saw myself in the trailer doing the 'I am a revolutionary' speech, I didn't remember shooting that. I kind of went to another place." "I'm saying," Chairman Fred's actual words, "everyone's dressed at the times. The Panthers were there. The spirit of the time entered the room." There were certain moments where I'd lose my voice and then there'd be a take where I'd find it again. I don't know where that second wind came from. It was very much an out-of-body experience. Stanfield nearly lost himself entirely. The deeper he dived into his O'Neill role over the course of Judas' 40-day shoot, the more he found himself suffering panic attacks in his pursuit of bringing truth to the character. I think I realized after doing this film how important therapy is, he says. Sometimes you get so deep into things that you lose track. We're very ambitious. We want to make this thing, make it right, do everything in our power to make sure we're being honest with the details. But sometimes through that process of playing characters who have been through a lot of emotional trauma, you end up tapping back into your own emotional trauma, and sometimes you're not prepared to do that. Not surprisingly, Najiri, who actually lived this story, wrestled with her emotions too. It triggered a lot of things that I had forgotten, a lot of things that I didn't want to remember, she says. PTSD is an unavoidable occupational risk for a Black creator who feels duty-bound to tell authentically Black stories in a world where Black trauma never seems to end. So it figures that a film as tough on the soul as Judas would forge crazy glue-tight bonds across the call sheet. It wasn't at all uncommon for actors to pull up to set on off days to watch their other castmates work. This is the first time I've shown up to set when I haven't been working, Kahlua jokes. But then Ashton Sanders, who plays Hampton confidant Jimmy Palmer, would be filming a cool scene and I'd call Dom and Lakeith and be like, hey, let's pull up. Sometimes we'd roll up and just be like, hop in the car, Stanfield says. Don't even go back into your trailer. Jump in the car. We're going straight to the bowling alley or the dance place or whatever. Stanfield and Kahlua have remained inextricably linked since their fraught first meeting at the Armitage family's ominous garden party in Get Out. Shortly after that film's 2017 release, both men were working in Atlanta. Stanfield on his Emmy-winning Fox series and Kahlua on Black Panther, and the pair grew closer. They'd later find themselves monologuing as South African children on Carnegie Hall's Pyramid stage for a star-studded one-off charity event directed by Oscar winner Danny Boyle, or catching up with each other on the festival circuit over the years. Stanfield heightened his vulnerable on-screen presence in Sorry to Bother You, 2018, and The Photograph, 2020, while Kahlua doubled down on his commanding intensity in Widows, 2018, and Queen and Slim, 2019. They became family. That much was obvious in a December Zoom interview for the story when Stanfield belched in the middle of an expansive answer about his early impressions of the Judas script and kept right on talking until his co-star called him out. Hey, you tried to pass like that was nothing, Kahlua howled. Their seemingly effortless fraternal dynamic undergrids some of the warmest moments in Judas, a deserved awards frontrunner that could well launch its leading men into even more rarefied Hollywood air. For as difficult as it can be for them to tackle a project of Judas's severity, that Kahlua, a Black man from London, and Stanfield, a brother from Victorville, California, can even build careers around this kind of work, separately and together, is in itself evidence of Hampton's lasting impact. We're lucky to be able to share the screen again, and again, it's going to be for something that's going to move people. That's going to be a culturally relevant moment, says Stanfield. We're just getting started in Black storytelling. For real. Well, that's all the time we have for today. This has been Elizabeth Smith, reading the February 2021 issue of Entertainment Weekly. I hope you've enjoyed today's reading from the audio reading service at the Allen County Public Library in Fort Wayne, Indiana.
Next on Recording Library of West Texas Radio, USA Today, followed by the Midland Reporter Telegram and Odessa American at 3.
This is a Recording Library of West Texas Community Update.
Sherwood Church of Christ, 4900 North Dixie Boulevard, offers free clothing on the first Saturday of every month. With so many families in the community are losing their jobs due to COVID and the downturn in oil, the Sherwood Clothes Closet is an opportunity for people to find needed clothing items for the entire family. Hours are 9 a.m. to 10:30 a.m.
This week on the Recording Library of West Texas Radio's Saturday Night Movie, we celebrate this weekend's big game with George Clooney's football film, Leatherheads.
Let me ask you a question. You like playing football?
I love playing football.
For a special breed of men called Leatherheads, the rules were simple. There were no rules. But when the game they love was